Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brains.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California, let's welcome our host, April Mahoney.
Good morning, Brains. No justice, no peace. No justice, no peace. No justice, no peace. As the crowd chants, it reverberates in unison off of the ceiling-to-floor glass windows in the Lemon Grove House of Worship. We all gather there to hear and see the legendary Jane Elliott arrive at the lectern. I clench my fists and bow my head, close my eyes and say, "Oh, Lord, hear our cry, the cry of a people, not just black people, old white people, young gay people, the disabled, true Native Americans, progressive women caring for the next generation of young children, the dreamers who are and have been and continuously to be subjected to cruelty, profiling, segregation, and degradation. Then and now, based mostly on the color of their skin and not the content of their character." Jane Elliott is a seasoned, great, gracious, older white woman, internationally known teacher, lecturer, diversity trainer, and recipient of the National Mental Health Association Award for Excellence in Education. She has arrived to expose prejudice and bigotry for what it is. The system is flawed. There's problems. And in response to the assassination of Martin Luther King, Jane celebrates him and speaks to us. This has been 50 years. She talks about the controversy. She talks about her blue-eyed, brown-eyed experiment. It's amazing, and I am so glad to have her here on the edge. Brains, please help me welcome Jane Elliott to On the Edge with April Mahoney. Good morning, Ms. Elliott. How are you?
Well, I'm just fine, except that I have to take exception. I always take exception, you know that, to your first statement, which you said people are being judged by the color of their skin. They're being mistreated because of the color of their skin. That is not the reason for this mistreatment. Skin color is natural. It cannot be changed. It should not be changed. It doesn't have to be changed. The problem is the ignorance that we have fostered and promoted and perpetuated in people about skin color. We will not get over this problem as long as people like you and I are willing to say, well, it's because of the color of my skin that they dislike me. No, if somebody dislikes me when they look at me and see the color of my skin, if they're reacting to the color of my skin, that's their problem, and they best not make it mine. I am not responsible for how people feel about the color of my skin, and neither are you responsible, nor is any black person responsible for making white people comfortable with your skin color. The first modern human beings that evolved on this earth over 500,000 years ago were black women. And black women do not have to apologize or make exceptions to the ignorance of white people who see black skin as a negative. Black skin was here first, and if you do a DNA on every human being on the face of the earth, you will find way back there in their DNA, part of their DNA came from a black country. Now,
I know. I'm telling you, Brian, she came fired up. She's locked and loaded. I'm so excited. Well, Jane, as a white woman.
It is about skin color. It's about ignorance. I'm an educator. The word educator comes from the root duck deuce, which means lead, the prefix e, which means out, the suffix ate, which means the act of, and the suffix or, which means one who does. An educator is one who leads people out of ignorance, and the first ignorance we have to lead people out of is the ignorance of thinking that you and I are members of different races. There's only one race on the face of the earth. It's the human race. We all belong to it. And if you don't belong to the human race, you must have come from outer space. And we have now a person in the White House who probably did.
Well, let me ask you a question. I want you to go back, and I want my brains to understand a little bit about your education, where you came from, and how the blue-eyed, brown-eyed exercise came into existence.
Well, I was born and raised in Northeast Iowa in an all-white, all-Christian community, and so I was quite certain that I was perfect because everybody said we were. After all, we had turned Jesus into a Pillsbury doughboy, and we turned God, we white folks turned God into an old white man with a long gray beard that looked like Charlton Heston playing Moses. So everybody around me believed that. So I believed that. That's what we taught. That's what we learned. So I was certain I wasn't racism because, as people in Riceville found out, after they found out that I had done the blue-eyed, brown-eyed exercise, and these are their exact words, I don't know why is she doing that here. We don't have any racism in Riceville. We don't have any. And they said niggers. They're quite certain that if there are no people of other colors groups around you, then you don't have any racism. You don't have to have people of color in this country, in your environment, to have racism. We are taught racism pre-birth, and we continue it until after death. So racism is as much a part of my existence as the air that I breathe. I breathe it in with the air that I breathe. This is a racist nation. Make no mistake about it. I tried to teach this. Go on.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Go on.
I was just wondering, you know, and I understand how you know, where you grew up and what that situation looked like.
Wait. I didn't grow up in Riceville. I grew older in Riceville.
All right.
I didn't grow up until I left there. And that's the problem. Many of us grow older. A few of us grow up. And those who grow up give up the myth of race. Now, go on.
So now, when you grew up, how did you see things so differently based upon your upbringing? Why are you fighting so hard for the underserved, overlooked, minorities, women, black, as a white woman? What purpose does this serve to you? How does this fulfill you?
My dad said, a fair thing is a pretty thing, and a right wrongs no man. If what you are doing is right, it might impoverish you, it might inconvenience you, it may make you angry, but it won't wrong you. He said, never judge a book by its cover. And he said, never put a stone in another man's path. He was an absolutely moral human being. He taught me more than I learned in Sunday school, or more than I taught when I taught Sunday school. Because people would say he was a man of cliches. He believed in every one of those things that he said, and that's the way he lived. I believed that every person has a right to equal treatment in the land of the free and the home of the brave. I was wrong. But I taught my students that. And I taught my children about Martin Luther King Jr. in January, and he was dead in April. And I had to go into my classroom and explain why anybody would assassinate a man whose philosophy was all about hope. For me, hope is an acronym for holding on to positive energy. And that's what Martin Luther King Jr. did, yeah. And he did it, and he knew that he was going to die for doing it. He was perfectly, absolutely aware of that. He sacrificed himself for the rest of us. Now, I'm not into self-sacrificing. You need to know that. However, I happen to think that Martin Luther King Jr. probably had a black mother. And black mothers do something that white mothers seem to be unable to do for the most part. They raise fantastic children. I'm serious about this. Fantastic children in spite of the awful obstacles that this society puts in their place. I'll not forget, simply as long as the black woman that stood beside me when I did a program some college, and I said to her, we'd done all the different things, and then I said to her, does it take courage for you sometimes to get out of bed in the morning? And she said, I'm going to say something that I've never said out loud before because I'm ashamed of it. And this was a tall, brilliant, black, head of a department in a college. I said, and that is? She said, I have two daughters. Both times when I was pregnant, I prayed that I wouldn't have a son. And I said, and that's because? She said, because I didn't want to think about what they would have to go through, and I didn't want to think about what I would have to go through when I lost them. And I looked at that woman's face, and there was one tear slowly coursing its way down the left side of that beautiful black face, and I thought, oh, my God, what have we done? What are we doing? every person in that room. There was a dry eye in the house. It was absolutely riveting. I told that story at a college 2 weeks ago. And when I was done, some members of the black male fraternity came up, and one of them said to my daughter, I didn't know what my mother was going through. I didn't know why she warned me every morning was so concerned until what your mother just said. He said, I'm going to go home and call my mother, and I'm going to call her every week from now on.
Oh, that is beautiful.
Black mothers, but black mothers have coping skills that white women never develop. Most of us never develop the coping skills that black women have to develop and have been developing since the beginning of the human race on this earth. Black women are my heroes, and I'm not saying that because I want to get over on black women. That's not it at all.
Right.
When Black Lives Matter march, you see very few white women there. But white women march for Me Too. Well, how
right.
about black women Me Three?
Right.
How about even considering black women Me One?
Right.
When white people hear Black Lives Matter, they think it says only Black Lives Matter. When black lives hear Black Lives Matter, I think they think Black Lives Matter too.
Right, right.
It's all in the way you perceive things. And perception is everything.
Exactly. I want you to explain to our brains about the experiment that you did and the foundation of the blue-eyed, brown-eyed exercise. Before you had come here to be with us in Lemon Grove, California, I looked at that video. I couldn't just look at one. I think there's three or four different versions from where you've traveled across the world demonstrating and facilitating this exercise. Can you tell our brains about that?
I was born the same year that Adolf Hitler and Franklin Roosevelt came to power. And one of the ways Adolf Hitler decided who went into the gas chamber was eye color. The day after Martin Luther King Jr. was killed, I knew I was going to have to make my children understand what happened and try to develop in them some empathy. So I split my kids according to the color of their eyes, just as Adolf Hitler did. I knew it worked for him. I figured if it would work for him for years, it would work for me for a couple of hours. I had no idea how it would work. People call this an experiment. But what I do when I do this exercise is create a microcosm of society in a classroom or a boardroom or a lecture hall. And if you call what I do an experiment, and it's creating a microcosm of society, then what we have been doing in this country with skin color for the last 300 years is an experiment. It is unethical and illegal to experiment with people without their knowledge or without their permission. I don't do an experiment. I don't experiment with children. But we have in this society, and we've been doing it for a very long time. I provide my students with a learning exercise, a learning experience, to help them develop empathy for other people. And it works. And it works no matter what age I use it with, it works.
It's powerful. It is really powerful. It's riveting. People need to go in and check it out and really kind of check themselves, you know, and even include black people, because we have stereotypes against other ethnic groups. We're all a human race, but, you know, we have internal backbiting between black Americans and Africans. So this is a wake-up call to all that walk this earth to be able to unify and to be able to look at yourself and look at your prejudice and look at your discriminations based off stereotypes, based off ignorance, based off lack of exposure, the inability to travel, all of those things. We want to talk a little bit about what's going on in the current political climate. And, oh, boy, I know that's going to get you fired up. But, you know, it seems like we're being set back 50 years with this joker.
Well, of course we are. Of course we are. Those caps that say make America great again really mean make America hate again.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to realize that we, like this fool, and he is a fool, like Ronald Reagan, wanted to go back to the 50s. The 50s were great for white males. They weren't worth a darn for the rest of us. The rest of us all had a whole long way to climb to get anywhere near where white males were. Now, white males are scared to death, and that's the reason we have this fool for the president. They saw 8 years of a black man in the White House, and I remember when Richard Nixon said to a group of white reporters, I'm trying to save the White House for you white people. Well, he didn't succeed. Yeah. See, I'm old, and I remember these things. Things like that, like Walter Cronkite saying to three leaders of the black community, interviewing them on television the night after Martin Luther King Jr. was killed, he said to those three leaders of the black community, when our leader was killed, his widow held us together. Who's going to keep your people in line? As if black people weren't part of my people and your people and our people. So I changed the channel, and there's Dan Rather saying to three leaders of the black community, don't you Negroes think that you should feel sympathy for us white people during this experience because we white people can't feel the anger at this killing that you Negroes can? And to me, those two males represented what is wrong with this country, total inability to empathize with those who are different from yourself. And that's the reason we have the situation we have going now. White males are aware that within 30 years, white people will be in a minority, numerical minority in the United States of America. And they're scared to death that they're going to want to be treated, that they're going to have to be treated the way they have treated people of color, other color groups, and women all their lives. They are
absolutely terrified. Speak on it.
Yeah, they are terrified. And that's the reason. And if you don't believe me, then you need to get Ben Wattenberg's book, The Birth Dearth. Ben Wattenberg was an advisor to presidents of the United States. He died a couple of years ago. I didn't cry. He wrote a book called The First Dearth. The first paragraph, it says, the main problem confronting the United States today is there aren't enough white babies being born in this country. If we do not change this immediately, this country, white people will become a numerical minority, and this will no longer be a white man's land. Now, I know a whole lot of Native Americans who think this never was a white man's land, fool.
Give it
back to us, and we'll take care of it again. So he says there are three ways we can solve this problem. Number one, we can pay women to have babies, as they have been doing in Western European nations for years. Then he says, and these are his words, not mine, unfortunately, we would have to pay women of all colors to have babies, so we don't want to do that. That sounds like racism to me. He says, number two, the second thing we could do is increase the number of legal immigrants allowed into this country every year. Once again, he says, unfortunately, the vast majority of people wanting to come to this country today are people of color, so we don't want to do that. He says, the third thing, and that explains the wall. If you don't believe that explains the wall, get real. San Diegans, stop financing the wall. He says,
right.
The third thing we can do is realize that 60% of the fetuses that are aborted every year are white. If we could keep that 60% alive, that would solve our birth dearth. Now, if you don't understand why they have defunded Planned Parenthood and why they are trying to overthrow Roe versus Wade, you need to realize it is to decrease the number of white embryos being aborted in this country. I told that to a group of college students several months ago, and there were two little boys sitting there with those red caps on with the Make America Hate Again thing on it, and they said, Miss Donnie, you know, I said, we'll talk later, come downstairs, we'll talk later. So later they came downstairs and we all sat around a big table, and I said, now what's your problem? He said, you've got your statistics wrong. I said, what are your new statistics? I said, mine came out of 1987 out of the American Enterprise Institute. He said, those statistics are wrong now. It's 39% of the fetuses that are aborted every year are white. 61% are fetuses of color. I said, you just made my point. He said, what do you mean? I said, I mean, we've made tremendous progress. We went from 60% of the fetuses being white to 39% of the fetuses being white. And he got this strange, gobsmacked look on his face, and he said, I didn't take it that way. I said, of course you didn't take it that way. You're a male. You're a white male. You took it to say that we're doing the right thing, but we've got to do even more. Get a clue as to what you just read and what you just said. And his little brother was sitting there, you know, a year younger probably, and he said, she's right. And he said, I've got to think about this. I said, you should think a long time about this. Anybody who thinks that this destroying Planned Parenthood is about stopping pregnancies, or about stopping abortions, is wrong. It's about stopping white abortions. That's what this is all about. It is about increasing the number of white people in this country.
Well, it's Valentine's Day. White folks, y'all better get on the grind. You better start humping.
Yeah, but, hey, Valentine's is lovely. It's love. It's all about love. What I'm talking about is not about love.
I know.
It's about justice. It's about justice. And Bell Hooks says we will never have a loving society until we have a just one. President Eisenhower said you cannot legislate love, but you can legislate justice. And you can legislate injustice, which they have done in Washington, D.C. in the last month. They legislated injustice with that tax law. And y'all need to know it. and y'all need to get off your polyunsaturated fatty acids and go out and
vote. You're killing me.
I don't want to do that either.
Get up off your fat and cholesterol brains. I love you.
Time for somebody to say to Paul Ryan, cut the duck up and sit down.
Right.
And stop telling the rest of the world how to live, because he's an Ayn Rand fan. And if you don't know who Ayn Rand is, get the book Atlas Shrugged, and then you'll realize what this man is all about and why that tax law was written the way it has been. It is just terrifying. And now, this week, they have decided, for they have finally told us what they've decided, that they're going to reduce Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. Now, I live in a senior community, and a whole lot of these folks are living hand-to-mouth on their Social Security, and they worked for 40 or 50 years and paid into Social Security, and he's going to decrease that. You're going to see a whole lot of homes for sale out here in California.
Yeah, and you're going to see twice the amount of homeless.
Oh, yeah, and you're going to see homeless. You're going to see your sidewalks covered with, instead of an occasional one, you're going to see your sidewalks covered with the homeless. And this is scary. I don't think people understand how vicious this whole thing is. What's worse about it is, it's unchristlike.
Right.
You know, we call ourselves a Christian nation. This is nothing what we're doing right now has anything to do with Christianity. The man in the White House has violated every one of the Ten Commandments. Think about that. And I guess people tell me about how brilliant white folks are compared to people of color. Think about this. People of color, the Aztecs and the Egyptians, created the pyramids. The Britons created Stonehenge. Now think of that comparison.
Exactly.
That comparison says something about the brilliance of the people in the Nile Valley. And if you haven't read Nile Valley Contributions to Civilization, you better get it and read it, because we teach black history. Oh, this month we're going to teach some black history. We're going to teach about slavery, and we're going to teach about Frederick Douglass. And as our president says, he's doing some wonderful things.
He's doing everything. He's a solopreneur.
He's doing some wonderful things. We aren't going to talk about the fact that, number one, Frederick Douglass has been dead for many years, and the fact that black people, Nile Valley, were doing cataract surgery with metal instruments before such a thing was heard of in Europe. Did you know that?
No.
Does anybody know these things? Did you know that our first black president was Abraham Lincoln, who was part black, part white, and part
And the second
Indian.
One apparently was Bill Clinton, huh?
The second one was Dwight Eisenhower, because his grandmother was black, and the third or fourth one was Bill Clinton. We've had a lot of black presidents, but they identified as white because they knew what was smart for them to do. And then along comes Barack Obama, who identified as black, and I gave a speech in England, in London, and somebody said, why are you calling him black? He's not black. He's got a white mother. I said,
he's mixed.
Yeah.
He's diluted.
I said, wait a minute. He has a right to identify himself as he chooses to, and he chooses to identify black. Why, she was just, and I had an argument here with a couple of women. Five women jumped down my throat when I was playing cards with them, and I wasn't winning, so they didn't have to. And they just let me know that there's, after all, one of them said, well, she's talking about somebody else. They might be biracial. I said, there's no such thing as biracial. Unless one of the parents of that person is from outer space. There is no such thing as biracial. They all just went crazy. And I thought, well, these people are telling me to shut up. I get paid to talk. I'm going home. I didn't go home that way. I waited until the kids woke up. And then I walked home, and they said, you can't walk home in the dark. I said, I'm not afraid of the dark. I was in less danger in the dark than I was with those women. It was interesting. You cannot. It takes years to convince people that there's no such thing as a black race or a white race or a brown or a red or a yellow race. There are only color groups in the human race.
That's right.
Okay, did you
That's right, and we're all running around
questions.
Like rats in a maze in this race.
Yes.
It's appalling. It's really appalling.
We aren't using our brains.
Right, exactly. Not here on the edge, because that's what we are. We are brains, and that's why you're here. What do we tell our baby brains? What do we tell our children, Jane?
You tell your children what I tell my children. Every person on this earth is a 30th to 50th cousin of you. And you don't. I will not tolerate having some of my ignorant cousins mistreat my other cousins because of my ignorance about skin color. I will not tolerate people mistreating others because of the ignorance about skin color in this country. I will not allow my students, my children that never did, to tell black jokes because black is not a joke. And black
you're telling me,
you
get your noodle busted.
Your
noodle straight busted.
Yeah. You want to get in real trouble today with me, tell a joke about blacks or tell a joke about gays and lesbians. Unless you are gay or lesbian, unless you are black, blacks have the right to tell black jokes if they choose to do so. I tell jokes about the Irish all the time because I'm Irish and I find us really amusing and really ignorant. But that's my right. I don't have the right to tell black jokes. I don't have the right to tell jokes about somebody's religion, although I find most religions pretty amusing. However, we have to teach our children that there's only one family on the face of the earth. We are all members of the family of man. Now, many of us, believe in the Bible. Whether it's true or not, we believe in it. The Bible talks about the family of man, and that's what we are all members of. And the first modern human beings that evolved on this earth were black women. Therefore, we are all descendants of the first modern human beings, and those are black women. Do not.
You know what else gets on my nerves is, you know, people are really trying to be neutral. You know, they don't want to be controversial. They don't want to rustle anybody's feathers. But when someone says to me, I don't see color. What did you say? You need to see an ophthalmologist for that. How long have you had that problem, right?
Some white woman will walk up to me and say, I don't see black color. I'm colorblind. And I immediately say, I knew that before you told me that, because if you weren't colorblind, you wouldn't have that color hair and you wouldn't wear that shirt with those pants. And then it's not funny anymore. And I say, I know what you're saying. You're trying to pretend that skin color doesn't exist. Well,
right.
If skin color didn't exist, there would be no people on this earth, because white people could not have survived where human beings evolved in Africa, in sub-Saharan Africa. Because their
you can get
would not have
you
any
can get white from black, but you sure can't get black from white.
You can't get no. You can't.
You do that. That just ain't happening. You know.
No, that's the way it is. That's your body adapts to the natural environment, and as people move farther and farther from the equator, their bodies produce less and less melanin because they were exposed to less and less sunlight. And finally, their bodies needed sunlight because there was only a few hours of sunlight in the northern parts of Europe. So their bodies became very white in order to take advantage of every bit of sunlight that they could. And in the Far East, people's skin color became yellow because of their diet and because of the environment. It had nothing to do with being God's chosen or not chosen children. People
right.
need to realize that. They don't want to realize it. They don't want to hear it. They don't want to listen to me, and they have my sympathy, and they can find it in the dictionary. And
wow.
I will tell you between which two words to look.
Well, I know that you have a plethora of words to choose from, and I thank you so much for sharing them with us. This has just been jam-packed, and this 30 minutes has just flown by. Can you share with our brains a way to get more information on the blue-eyed, brown-eyed exercise, your books, and speaking engagements, please, Jane?
Yeah. Go to my website, jane@janeelliott.com. You can get the book, A Collar in My Pocket, and it's rather good. I just got a letter from a teacher who couldn't put it down, and so he gave his students individual projects to do while he could read that book in class. He said, it's bad teaching,
wow.
but I need to put it in this book. Anyway, A Collar in My Pocket is available from Amazon, and you should go to my website and download the printed learning materials that are there. The first is a set of statements, typical statements that white folks make, like, when I see you, I don't see you black. Go through that list of statements, check those which you have heard with which you would agree, then download the clarifications of those statements, which tells you how those things are perceived and why you ought not to be saying them. The third page is a set of commitments to combat racism. 18 things that you can do in your own environment to challenge your own and your friends or your relatives' racism. Racism, people are going to say, well, racism is a societal problem. No, societies are made of individuals. If individuals change their racist behaviors and attitudes, we will change this society. I know that. There's not a doubt in my mind about that. And then download the bibliography, read everything on the bibliography within the next 3 months. And you can, because there's nothing difficult in that bibliography. But what, when you get, before you do that, get the book, write down this name, The Myth of Race, by Robert Wald Sussman. Everybody should read that book. And you should also read The Racial Conditioning of Our Children by Nathan Rutstein. And the subtitle of that is Ending Psychological Genocide in Our Schools. That's what's going on in our schools, and you need to realize that you need to read Nathan Rutstein's book. You absolutely have to read it.
It was awesome because my father used to tell me that when I was, 8, 9 years old, I had a reading challenge. I really couldn't hear phonetically the sounds of the words. And he goes, you know what? He says, I send you to school every day to get the best education. He says, and I'm sending you to become more ignorant. And that is the state that we're in right now. Brains, we are in a state of ignorance. Ignorance means not knowing. I need you to open up your mind, open up your heart, open up a doggone book. Stop being...
We reward ignorance on a daily basis in this country. We have a president who cannot speak. He's finally found a word. What's the word that he's using all the time now? Reciprocity. He's found reciprocal and reciprocity. And he uses it 3 or 4 times every time he says a paragraph. He's found 2 new words. Now, I want him to find the word stupid. But you can't fix stupid. I want him to find the word educable. I want him to find the word equality. I want him to find the word fairness. I want him to find the words. I want him to find something other than great and tremendous and terrific.
Exactly. Right. And stop speaking in the I am. Thank you, Jane. Thank you so much for coming here on the edge and standing for something and not just falling for anything. Brains, I love that picture of me and you. It is just really, it's near dear to my heart. I have it framed right here on my desk because I want to reflect.
Oh, that's lovely.
To reflect. And I cherish your time with us. I cherish and I respect your courage for being from a different lane, but driving on my highway.
Listen to me. Do not respect me for courage speaking out against this. You have to speak. You have to live with this every day. Do not thank any white woman or any white man for saying this has to stop. We should have been doing something to stop it for the last 500 years. So you don't have to thank me for this. This is a job for which I was put on this earth to do.
All right. Well,
I don't have a choice. Don't thank me for it.
I will thank God for that. Brains,
this
has been riveting, and this has been one of my top shows. Please go back and listen to other edgy conversations here on Blog Talk Radio. I've got everything from soup to nuts, okay? The struggle is real. Know that we are on the battlefield. Not for me, not for you, but for society, for the world. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, on the World Wide Web at agoodperson.biz. Jane, again, thank you from the bottom of my socks, baby, because my heart just is not deep enough. Please come back to the edge. You always have a home here, all right?
No, thank you, and I'm wondering where I fall in that soup to nuts thing.
Well, it ain't on the nut side, that's for sure.
I'm not
all
sure.
All right, Brains,
so much,
until we talk again. Thank you so much. Yep. Be well.
Am I?